My privilege to introduce to you Andrew Cole. I don't really know, I have met him before when he was about yo-hi. I haven't really met him before, but my wife went to something he was at a while ago and said what a great speaker he was. So there you are, mate. Your reputation is preceding you. And Andrew Cole is, you can read the notes as much as I can, but let me say it's what it says about you here. I haven't got it. You'll have to tell me. What do you do for a living?
I work as a doctor for a Christian health organisation called Hope Healthcare. It's linked to the Anglican Church, and we run a couple of hospitals in Sydney, one in the southwest and two in the north, and we look after people who are disabled, people who are dying, and people who've lost their marbles. And also teach at the University of New South Wales.
Right. And now, bit more personal, family. Married, children, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, I'm married to Marilyn. She's an executive teacher at the very aptly named Hassell College at Hoxton Park. It's a great name for a school. I pity the poor guy that was actually called Hassell, it was named after. We've been married for nearly 30 years. We have four children. Our oldest is married and gone, thank goodness. The other three we're still working on. He's an engineer and a youth worker. Our next one down is a medical student. She's in fourth year at New South. Our next one down is studying liberal studies at Sydney. I don't really know what it is, but it keeps her busy and quiet. And the last one's in school in year 11.
I know a joke about someone doing liberal studies. You know, there's that one, the scientist looks at something and says, why is it so? The engineer looks at it and says, how is it made? The accountant looks at it and says, what's it cost? And the liberal studies person says, would you like fries with that?
All I can say is she's paying her tuition fees.
Okay, I'll leave you to it, Andrew.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'll just raise this microphone up to a normal height and and off we go. Well, it's great to be there. It's really good to be with a bunch of blokes and have the opportunity to talk about some things, discuss some things, give you the opportunity to ask some questions and see how we go from there. Before we get into blokes, bodies and beliefs, let's just pray for a sec. Dear Lord, we thank you for this opportunity today to come together, to come away from our lives, whatever is going on out there, to come together to talk about things, to meet with friends, to make new friends, to think seriously about being your men in our world. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, well, we'll get the obvious thing out of the way, and that's Happy Father's Day for tomorrow. And if you're lucky enough to get breakfast in bed, good luck to you. But I don't think I will be somehow. My youngest son doesn't know that Saturday and Sunday have a morning. He usually gets up about 1 o'clock, and he goes to evening church, so that's all right. May I have the first slide, please? Well, many of us believe strange things. I call this bodies, blokes and beliefs, and it's worth thinking about where our beliefs come from, because it helps us to understand why we've got some funny ideas in our heads. Our beliefs start with what our parents teach us. And of course, even the best parents in the world don't know everything there is to know about everything, and they aren't always terribly accurate about everything that they know, but nevertheless they teach us. And then we learn a whole range of other things as we go up through school, and we learn things in the classroom, and we learn things behind the toilets, and we learn things in the sports ground, and we learn in all sorts of different places. And as we get older, we learn in our peer groups. We learn in our peer groups in high school, at TAFE, in the trade. If we're learning from somebody who's teaching us a trade, we learn an awful lot from that person. If we go to college, we learn a lot from that person. And finally, we learn a lot about our beliefs in our working environments, so that what happens by the time we get to about 25 or 30 or 40 or whatever age we're at, what's going on in here in terms of what we believe, and I'm using this in the broadest possible sense of all the things we know, not just the Christian things we know, but the things we know about the world, is a huge mixture. When I was driving here across from the University of New South Wales this morning, I drove through the New Sydney Tunnel, and it's great. It costs a bomb to drive through it, but it sure saves time. And if you ever have the opportunity, well, you won't now, but I did last weekend, to walk through it, and you have a look at the sandstones that are in the wall of that tunnel, and they're quite fantastic. And if you look at them closely, they're a conglomerate. There's little lumps of sand and big lumps of sand and rock, and there's red sand and there's yellow sand and there's orange sand and there's every other sand in amongst the one sandstone. It's called a conglomerate rock. Your beliefs and my beliefs inside our heads are conglomerate rocks, okay? This is not a statement about how thick you or I are. It's a statement about the way that our beliefs are put together. And what I'm getting to saying is there's an awful lot of things that we believe we've just kind of soaked up from people around us, and we've never really thought about where those beliefs have come from. And that applies in a very real way with the beliefs that we have about our bodies and our lives, quite apart from our Christian beliefs. It often has to do with our Christian beliefs as well, incidentally, but particularly the physical things. So in here, we're conglomerate locks, and that explains why a lot of the things that people believe, and even you and I believe, get more strange as we get older. When they get really bad beliefs, we call them paranoia, and we ring up the removals and send people off to, you know, hospital to have a little stay. But people can believe really strange things about themselves and about their lives and what they can do and what they can't do. And it's just because we pick up our beliefs and we often don't think too hard about what those beliefs mean. And we hang on to those beliefs until one of three things happen. Either we die, and then we really find out whether if what we believed about life in general and the Lord in particular was right or not. Or we lose our marbles and we forget about our beliefs because there's not too much going on. Or we change our beliefs. We modify our beliefs, and we modify our beliefs as we go on. And hopefully I'll give you the opportunity to modify some beliefs today, because there's a fair chance that some of the beliefs that any of us have at any given point in time about our bodies and about the way we function have got some quite wrong ideas in. An opportunity to think about that today. So if I can have the next slide. And these beliefs take place against the kind of belief structures that happen in our peer groups as we get older. So between about 15 and 25, the prevailing belief seems to mostly believe, I can get away with anything. Okay, I can drive a car as fast as I like. I can outrun the cops while I'm driving my car as fast as I like. I can drink as much as I like. I can stay up all night and still be able to do a fair day's work the next day or a reasonable day's study at school the next day. There's a heap of other beliefs that people have in their heads when they're 15 to 25. It's what's called the indestructible years. It's the risk-taking years. And looking around at this audience, most of us have survived those years. And we've survived the risks and we've gotten on with life. However, we will have picked up things, beliefs about our bodies, beliefs about our lives in those years that may need re-examining in the light of how we are now and how we're going on now. But there's all sorts of things that we believe in those years. And they're usually the years before we've taken on any significant degree of responsibility in terms of being married or having kids or having a house. I mean, I don't call buying a car having any significant degree of responsibility because they're insured and they're disposable and you can always get another one. Doesn't apply for wives and maybe a few other things in our lives as well. Next generation, 25 to 35. And I think that's the generation when we're just starting to really get stuck into life. It's often the time that we've discovered what it is that we're going to do in life. Apprenticeship's finished and we're in a trade, and with any luck we're in our own small business, or if we've gone to college, we've finished college and we're starting to develop professionally in our lives and we're getting on with things. In our early career days, those really are the days that we flog ourselves. They really are the days we flog ourselves. We work hard and we play hard. The sky is the limit. We're just starting out and things look like, you know, we can do whatever we want within the job we've got, within the direction we're going. Between 25 and 35, people get into an organisation and they go to courses and they work hard for the organisation. People tell them they're doing well. And most people in a big organisation think, I could get to the top of this organisation. I could really get somewhere. If you're plumbing or if you're in a building trade and you're self-employed and you're getting on with things, I can really make a go of this. I can build my own house. I can build a business. I can have people working for me. I can make a lot of money. Often in these years, a special person rocks along of the other gender. And, wow, you know, I can get on, I can make a life. I can have a family. I can be me. We can be we. And kids come along. And it's a time of working hard and playing hard and thinking that those kind of energy levels are going to go forever. But also thinking that the first flush of really getting on and going hard in our work, in our marriage and so forth, is going to keep going without a lot of looking after it. We get to 35 or 45, ease off a little bit. This, for most blokes, is risky years. Other women still notice me. Other women still notice me. Wife's had a few kids. Kids are squawking, keeping you awake at night. You're working hard. You get home at 7 o'clock. Your wife's had all day at home and she gives you an earful. I've been with the kids all day. Or something like that. And it's awfully easy for blokes at that time to wander off, get distracted. And you're 35 or 40 and there's a 20-something-year-old secretary at work. Who's paying you attention? Because you're the powerful person at work. Risky generation. Next generation, 45 to 55, denial starts setting in. I can do anything I could do when I was 25. Now we're cutting home, okay? I can see the blokes are in this generation starting to laugh. I can do anything I could do at 25. Well, when I was 25, I did my first owner-builder's job. When I was 35, I did my second one. And when I was 45, I did part of a one and a builder did the rest. And that's what it's about. The energy levels, they start to come down a bit, don't they? You've got to have 8 hours sleep at night. You can't get away with 4 or 5 or 6 anymore. And when the kid knocks on the door and says, Dad, will you let me in because I left my key and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, there's no sense of humour anymore because you need your sleep. Okay. Next generation, 55 to 65, one of two things start to happen. I can't wait to retire. I can see there's something else to do in life. Or the real tragics who believe, like Mr. Costello, that work's going to go on forever. The real tragics who believe that work, the same work that I've done since I was 25, I'm going to keep doing it forever. I'm going to be able to do what I did forever. And that's a problem. So our beliefs are structured both by what individual people have put into our minds and we've picked up, and also by what the people around us are thinking year by year as we go. Next slide, please. How does that go with what's actually going on in our lives? Now, with the beliefs that we have, the core part of our belief has to do, and it's a totally unconscious belief, it has to do with what's going on in our bodies. Okay, you have a belief about what's going on in your bodies and you're checking what's going on in your bodies every minute, every day, and you're doing it subconsciously. And there's all sorts of interesting things that are going on. Many of us ignore warning signs. Okay, looking around this audience, I'd have to say that about 10 or 15% of you are ignoring the first one. Maybe more. My eyes aren't that good. That's the last warning sign. Unfit and putting on weight. Being overweight as you get older is a disaster. It is a disaster. Do everything you can, brothers, to get your weight down to an ideal weight and keep it there. Why is that a problem? It's a problem because it's now become apparent that the kind of American health foods that we eat at McDonald's and Big Brother and all the chicken shops and all the takeaways and so forth, they're full of all the kinds of things that taste wonderful that you shouldn't eat. They really came straight out of the Garden of Eden. I happen to believe that there's a fair chance that the forbidden fruit on the tree was not an apple, nor was it the pear on the ground. I suspect it was a burger. I suspect it was a burger. Unfitness and putting on weight is a major issue as you get older for a whole range of reasons. First of all, if you're carrying too much weight around, you are slowly grinding your hip joints and your knee joints into oblivion. Your hip joints and your knee joints are weight-bearing joints, and they wear out faster if there's more weight being carried on them. Okay? That's the first and most obvious thing. So if you want to stay out of the hands of the orthopedic surgeons, and believe me, they cost a lot of money and inflict a lot of pain, keep your weight down because you won't grind your hips and your knees into oblivion, despite the fact that you probably did a fair bit of damage to them when you were playing soccer in your 20s and 30s when you thought you could play hard and work hard. But putting on weight, particularly around here, is a significant issue because there's something special about the fat cells in your tummy that leads to all sorts of other risk factors to do with diabetes, to do with shoving your cholesterol levels up high, and to do with linkage with high blood pressure, none of which are good things to get. Okay, there's a particular issue too. People say, well, as long as I'm a bit overweight and I'm fit, it doesn't really matter. And to a point, that is true. To a point, that is true. But what tends to happen as you get older is that we all tend to get less fit as we get older. So there comes a point that if you've always been overweight and you've been fit when you were younger, there'll come a point when you will become unfit and you're still carrying that weight and you have a problem. And if you have an opportunity to make sure that your kids are not growing up overweight, you will do wonderful things for their health in future, because the statistics are now that half of all Australian school children below the age of 12 have got a weight problem, and a quarter of all school children under the age of 12 are morbidly overweight. They're going to have serious problems when they're older. Obesity is the single biggest problem in our community at the moment. Okay. There's a particular problem, though, that fat people, round people around the middle with short necks, you know, the people that play in the first front row, have as they get older, and that is particularly to do with snoring and keeping themselves and their wives awake at night. How many folks here have their wives tell them on a regular basis that they snore so loudly that their wives can't get to sleep? Okay. If you are in that category and you're carrying a bit of extra weight and you find trouble staying awake during the day, you need to get yourself medically checked out. Because there's a particular condition called sleep apnea, which is related to being a bit overweight, having thick necks and short body build and being a bit round. And what happens with sleep apnea when you go to sleep is that initially, the first little bits of sleep, you're quite wide awake, you drop down into sleep, your muscle tone's still good, you drop deeper and deeper into sleep, and as your muscles relax and you go all floppy, which is what you're supposed to do when you're fully rested, if you're a bit thick around here and you've got a bit of fat deposited around here and also you've got a short neck anyway, what tends to happen is that your airway shuts down and it relaxes to the point that the air makes a big noise as it goes in and out. That's what snoring is, you know. And if you actually sit there right now and go, you can feel the thing that's making the noise is at the back of your throat, the back of your palate vibrating, wobbling to and fro as it relaxes. But the problem with that is if it relaxes to a certain point, it can actually partially block the airway. And your body sends a message and says, help, I'm about to stop breathing, and it starts to wake you up. And it wakes you up to a point that your muscle tone comes back to normal, almost wakes you up. Okay, the airway opens up again, you breathe normally, you go back to sleep, you go back into deep sleep, the thing blocks, and you spend all night waking and sleeping and waking and sleeping and waking and sleeping, but you don't realise you're doing it. And a lot of these people spend a lot of the day feeling dreadfully tired. So if you snore a lot at night and in your 40s and 50s and you're a bit overweight and you are feeling really tired in the day, get yourself checked out because there's a fair chance you've got sleep apnea. And it can be looked after. We can put a thing that looks like a deep sea diver on your face and keep your airways open while you're asleep and you can lose weight and get better. Rising blood pressure. Okay. There's a sign on the back of certain cars around the place that says insanity is hereditary, you get it from your children, from them doing things to you. Now, rising blood pressure is a bit in the same category. Rising blood pressure is something that you don't ignore as you get older. It means that you need to have it checked. In an audience this size, if all of you guys were in your 30s, three of you would already have blood pressure and you wouldn't know it because it's something you can't feel, you don't perceive it's happening until it causes you to have a heart attack or a stroke, and by then it's a bit sad and a bit too late. Rising cholesterol is something that needs not to be ignored, and these are the kinds of things that should be checked by everybody, certainly from the age of 40 onwards, and blood pressure preferably from the age of 30 onwards. Chest pains, don't ignore them. If you have chest pains, go get them checked out. See, blokes have this belief, particularly in the 20s and 30s and 40s, that we're indestructible and odd pains and aches and things don't matter. But if you wake up at night and you've got a chest pain at 2 o'clock in the morning and it doesn't go away for half an hour, that's a serious matter. Okay? You wouldn't believe the number of people that stay lying in bed hoping the pain's going to go away. And when it doesn't go away, you know, and they get to casualty 2 hours later and they say, oh, gee, I was lying in bed and it felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest. And after we made sure that, you know, they weren't in fact referring to the other person in bed with them, that it really was a feeling like an elephant was sitting on their chest. You say to them, why on earth didn't you do something about it? Why on earth didn't you come earlier? Oh, I didn't think it was important. Well, I mean, you know. And then you take the history and you find out that the person's been having the pains building up, slowly getting worse, for 3 months or 6 months before that. And you think, why on earth didn't that person get it checked out? Because they thought it didn't matter. Well, odd pains in funny places do matter and it's worth getting them checked out. Okay? Only take 20 minutes of your GP's time to tell him you're being an idiot and you don't have to worry about it, and then you go on and that's okay. But the people that do have something that's worth checking out and needs to be checked out, important not to ignore it. Numbness or weakness in arms or legs, especially if it's temporary and it comes and goes, is something very, very important not to ignore. This is mainly for blokes in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Many years ago when I was a GP at Revesby, a bloke walked in at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, I was the young doctor in the practice, and so I got to see all the walk-ins on Friday afternoon because the other guys were busy leaving for the weekend. And this guy walked in, he sat down, and he said, Doc, I've got a real funny story to tell you. And I said, oh yeah, try me. And he said, 2 days ago, he said, I couldn't use my right hand for 20 minutes. And my words weren't coming out right. And I said, that's pretty significant. And I looked at him, now this is 20 years ago now, and I looked at him and he was clearly a person that used to go to the Revesby Workers Club for the special lunch every day. And after he'd finished at the Revesby Workers Club, he used to go down to the Revesby pub. And and yes, he'd been a digger during the war and all that sort of thing. And I took a bit more history, and yes, he had high blood pressure, and yes, even in those days he had cholesterol. And I said, well, have you had any other episodes like this? And he said, well, yes. He said, about 2 weeks ago, he said, the same thing happened to my leg. It just went numb and I couldn't walk on it for 20 minutes, half an hour. And I said, what happened? He said, well, my wife told me to stop being silly and go see the doctor. And so I did. And it was another doctor around the corner who's no longer in practice. And I said, that's very interesting. What did the other doctor say? And he said, oh, he said it was a virus and gave me an antibiotic. And and I thought, well, that's interesting. And I examined the guy. And he clearly had two warning strokes. Now, nowadays, probably about half of you folks in this audience would know that if you have numbness or weakness in a hand or a foot and it lasts for, you know, a couple of minutes, you need to get yourself off to either your local doctor or preferably a big hospital real quick to get it checked out. Because with a warning stroke, the next thing that happens in about 50% of cases within 2 weeks is a full-blown stroke. And brothers, you don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. I look after those people all the time. You don't want to go there. Anyway, I examined the guy and he was clearly having a warning stroke, and I told him, well, you need to go to hospital right away. He said, why is that? Is it important? I said, yeah, you betcha. You want a stroke? That was when he realised it was important. So I sent him off to Concord, and I rang my friend at Concord and I said, boy, have I got a Bobby Dazzler for you. You know, make sure you got everything ready. And they had him in. They had him investigated, and he started having his stroke while he was having his scans. And they got him into the operating theatre and they unclogged the artery in the neck and they saved him. And 2 weeks later, he walked in with a box of chocolates. Full of cholesterol. And said, thanks, Doc. Which was good. Don't ignore warning signs. Next slide. There's a few more physical signs not to ignore. Changes in bowel habits. Okay. People ask me, what is a normal bowel habit? The short answer to that is the normal bowel habit is whatever your bowel habit's been for the last 20 years. Now, if I took a census in here, there will be some people who go and do a number two twice a day. There might even be a few people here, but they're more likely to be women, so they won't be here, that don't do a number two three times a day. That is just normal. It's a bit of a waste of time, but it is normal. Most people would do a number two once a day and usually after breakfast because there's a rule that full tummy creates a need for emptying quite soon afterwards. We have a complicated medical name for it, but it's gastrocolic reflex. But basically, if you put stuff in the top, you've got to put stuff out the bottom. And, you know, it's a bit like computers, garbage in, garbage out. And some people are lucky enough to go once every 2 days. And if that's been your habit lifelong, don't worry about it. That's quite normal. Because if you think about it, the average length of time spent sitting and contemplating the meaning of life on the toilet and getting a cold bum is about, depends. It's usually about 10 minutes from sort of entry to exit and wiping and cleaning and washing your hands and doing all those other kinds of things. So if you go once every 2 days, as against the bloke that goes twice in a day, you're saving half an hour of your time every day, which is about 3 hours of time a week, which is a saving of about 12 hours of time a month. So you're saving a full day a month, which is six full 24-hour periods. In other words, you're saving a week of your life every year by not being anxious about going to the toilet as frequently as other people do go to the toilet. So whatever is a normal bowel habit for you, as long as it doesn't change, is fine. But if your bowel habit has always been to go once every second day and you suddenly have to start going twice a day, you need checking out. And if your bowel habit has always been to go three times a day and you suddenly can go 3 days without having to go, and then you do a Bobby Dazzler and feel greatly relieved, you need checking out. And if you ever see blood in the toilet, you need checking out. Don't ignore those warning signs. Don't ignore those warning signs of bowel habit changes. Waterworks slowing down. Guys, it happens to all of us. Okay. The local primary school near where I live in Hurstville Grove, and the local primary school is at Penshurst. And do you know what the motto of Penshurst Primary School is? It's famous. The motto is aim high. The motto is aim high. And you know what? That's the little boys do on the back of the dunnies. Okay. Now, we have been gifted with this thing at the base of our bladder called a prostate. And it's a very important organ because it creates the liquid within which our sperms can swim and be nourished and cause us to have children. So, you know, it ceases to become quite such an important organ after about 35 or 40, or if you're, the media magnate, you know, who still thinks he's 45 and he's 75 and he... Beg pardon? Murdoch, that's the one. Rupert. I was thinking Rudolph, but it's Rupert. I couldn't think of the first name. He fathered a kid when he was 72, so his prostate obviously still works. But, and he obviously thinks that life's going to go on forever, which is a bit silly, but still. Our waterworks do slow down, and it's quite normal in your 40s and 50s, well, maybe your 50s and 60s, to start to need to go to the toilet once a night. And you get up, and as you get in your 70s, you go twice a night. But what is a problem is when you go to the toilet and you stand there and nothing happens, and it's not actually, you know, a communal toilet, you're the only person standing there. It's normal to have a bashful bladder when other people are watching, you know, looking over the side and all those things. But when you're standing there by yourself and it's not a particularly cold night, that's a bit of a problem if nothing happens for a couple of minutes. And you think about it and you think about waterfalls and all those other things, and then finally something starts to happen. You need that checking out. You need your prostate checking out, because the prostate grows with age. And as it grows outwards, it also grows inwards. And the tube that carries your urine runs right from the bladder, runs right down through the middle of the prostate. And as it expands outwards, it also expands inwards and constricts that ureter and makes you flow a bit slower, which is why at Penshurst Primary they can aim high. And when I was in primary, I could hit 8 foot up the wall. Okay. If you can't hit a couple of feet up the wall when you're in primary, it probably means you had a bladder problem when you were a kid, and that's how we pick them up. But what you find as you get older is that your ability to hit higher up the wall drops down, and if you have a big hesitancy problem, it needs to be checked out. Skin problems, don't ignore them. We have all spent our life in the sun as kids, and none of us were told to wear hats when we were kids because they didn't realise how important it was. And if you have spots on your skin that are dark, or spots or scabs or things that don't heal, go off and get them checked out real quick, real quick. And most GPs in Australia know about getting those things checked out. But skin problems are important. They do matter. And especially if they're in places you can't see them, especially if they're in places that only your wife can see them. Because oftentimes then you don't understand, you don't appreciate that something is important. Eye problems. Everybody over the age of 40 should have their eyes checked every year, whether they wear glasses or not. The reason for that is that, most of us start to need glasses by the time we're 40 anyway, because our arms aren't long enough to, read with. But the reason for that is that there are a couple of silent illnesses that can happen to your eyes, even though you don't need glasses to see, in particular one called glaucoma, where the pressure inside your eyes can increase in a totally painless kind of way and make you go blind without realising it, because it makes you go blind from the edges of your visual field inwards, and you don't perceive that it's happening, because when you're looking at somebody or something or you're reading something, you're only using a tiny amount of your central vision to see with. All the vision around the outside, you don't perceive it knocking off and going off slowly in glaucoma, and people with glaucoma can go blind without realising it. So everybody should be having their eyes checked, particularly for the pressure in their eyes, every year from the age of 40. Next, please. But the body things are easy. The things that are not so easy are the emotional things. Many of us don't think we need to talk about anything. It's a real bloke's problem that we think I can solve all my own problems. I don't need to talk to anybody else. Or it is weak of me to admit that I have problems. So many blokes go along carrying a load because they just can't admit to somebody else that they are carrying a load. Or they think that everybody has problems with the wife and kids. Now, let me say, I happen to believe that's true, in that there are relationship problems with the most perfect and the best kind of relationships in life. But trying to deal with the problems that we have within our families without talking with other people about those problems is to not let ourselves discover that everybody's coping with those kinds of problems. And as we talk about those issues with the people around us, we can put in place things that will help us to sort them out. Or people think nobody else has got the problems I've got. Believe me, we have. We have. I might not have exactly the problems you've got. I've probably got, Bobby Dazzlers and other areas that you don't even want to know about. But everybody has problems in some description, and somewhere somebody else will have had the problem that is worrying you, whether it's anxiety about your finances, anxiety about your kids' behaviour, whether you feel you're drifting away emotionally from your wife, whatever it is, there's always people out there that have had that problem, and there are always people with whom you can talk to sort out that problem. Or blokes think the problems are not my fault. Very dangerous thing to think. Very dangerous thing to think. It is my belief that if we have problems that we're trying to cope with, if we think that those problems are not our fault, we're denying any part or any relationship we have to those problems. The problems I have with my wife, it's all her fault. The problems I have with my kids, it's their fault. They're not listening to. The problems at work, it's the boss. It takes two to tango in any relationship. And recognising that we carry a burden of responsibility for what happens in our relationships is something that's absolutely critical for blokes to be able to live a normal life and sleep at night. And the biggest lie of all, it's too late to talk about my problems. It is never too late to talk about your problems until you can't talk, okay? Until you're dead. It's never too late to talk about problems at any stage as long as you're alive. Next slide, please. But we do all get older. There's no risk of that. So what can we do about, you know, staying healthy, being healthy as we get older? Well, first of all, good physical ageing. Physical activity is important. Maintain our physical activity, get our weight down. Barry O'Farrell, who this week did not become leader of the Liberal Party in this state, do you know what his nickname used to be? Fatty O'Barrell. Fatty O'Barrell. And he used to weigh 50 kilos more than he does now, and he used to have a beard. And he said, no, I'm never going to be leader of the Liberal Party until I lose weight and, you know, shave my beard. And about 2 years ago, he shaved his beard. And about 3 years ago, he started on a weight reduction program, treadmilling every day, and he's lost 40 kilos. He has lost 40 kilos in 2.5 years. And when they rang him up the other day to ask if he was going to go for the leadership of the Liberal Party, he said, I'm sorry, I can't talk now, I'm on the treadmill. Which, if you knew Barry O'Farrell, knew, yes, I would like to be leader of the Liberal Party because I'm still losing weight. It was one of the two things he said. It is possible to lose weight. It is possible to get fit, even if you're carrying weight and too much weight as you get older. And maintaining your physical weight and maintaining your health is also about eating and eating properly. Eating 3 meals a day, not grazing and not having a liquid lunch that consists of 5 cups of strong coffee or a couple of glasses of wine. My grandfather used to say, and he was a very wise man, and the nutritionists still say it, eat breakfast like a king, eat lunch like a prince, and eat your dinner like a pauper. And what do? The other way around. How many of you guys actually eat breakfast? All right. How many of you eat more than an apple for breakfast? We're getting better. How many of you have a one-course breakfast? Okay, now how many of you guys have a two-course breakfast? Okay, now we're getting to the healthy eaters. How many of you in your two-course breakfast actually have some fruit or vegetables? Ooh, healthy eating's getting lower all the time. Okay, that's great. That's great. My other grandfather came from a farm background in Ireland, and he had a three-course breakfast. He had porridge. And if you lay a good foundation of cereal, you know you never feel hungry till about 12 o'clock. He had porridge. On top of porridge, he had bacon and eggs. And if you know about eating an egg at breakfast time, you'll know that there's something in the protein of an egg that also causes you not to feel hungry. And he finished up with toast and a cup of Irish breakfast tea. Now, interesting thing, I used to eat a three-course breakfast for most of my life until I was about 21 or 22, and I was skinny as a rake. Okay, I'm still not exactly overweight, though I have got some spread in the middle. But as soon as I stopped eating three-course breakfast, which happened when I started to become a hospital resident and I had to cook my own, and then I got married and my wife and I were both business, I started putting on weight. Do you know why I put on weight? Because I was eating all my food at the wrong end of the day. You eat your calories when you're going to do your work. You eat your calories in the middle of the day to keep you going, and you don't eat a huge meal at the end of the day, because what's going to happen to that food? It's going to go straight to fat. Because you're not going to exercise. You're not going to do anything with that big dinner that you eat at 6 or 7 o'clock unless you happen to work a night shift. Because you're going to go to bed within a couple of hours. If you're lucky, you might take the dog for a walk for half an hour, you know, if the thing whinges enough to get you out. But the way that we eat and the way that we look after our bodies and our nutrition is all wrong. Big breakfast, moderate lunch, small dinner. Fits with working hard during the day and relaxing at the end of the day. If you eat a smaller dinner, you'll actually sleep better because there's less blood going into digesting and more blood going to your head to recreate what's going on inside your head. Okay, the dietitians say we should be eating between 5 and 7 portions of fruit or vegetables a day. Now, I would defy more than about 5 people in this audience to be eating 5 or 7 portions of fruit or vegetables a day, but maybe they're the people that are going to the loo 3 times a day to do number 2s. But 5 or 7 portions a day of fruit and vegetables is quite a lot of fruit and vegetables, and that is what the dietitians say we need to eat to be healthy and not have a heap of calories. That means a couple of pieces of fruit at breakfast, some fruit and veggies at lunchtime, and a couple of helpings of veggies with your dinner. Stress management, deal with each day at a time. Annual checkups are important. I've spoken about that. Your eyes, your blood pressure, after 40 annual checkups, and I'd suggest before 40, at least every 2 years. And ask about the things that worry you. If something concerns you when you go see a doctor, talk about it. But beware of Dr. Internet. Okay, beware of Dr. Internet. My grandfather, who, as I said, was very wise and knew all about dietetics before dietitians did, also used to tell me, don't believe what you read on walls. Okay, don't believe what you read on walls. And the reason he used to say that was because there used to be, there's still a wall, but they don't use it anymore, there's still a wall between Redfern and Central Station. On the left-hand side, as you're going to the city, just up where the steam engines used to come up out of the dive in the old days, and people used to paint the most incredible political slogans on it. And there was a guy that had the most contorted logic, and he sort of got from, mining for something or other at Baraba right through to the American president through three logical steps that were, there was no logic to anybody else. And people write incredible things on walls that don't make any sense except to the person that's writing it. Today's equivalent of walls is the internet. Today's equivalent of walls is the internet. Don't believe everything you read on walls. Don't believe everything you read in the internet. Because the internet is composed of an awful lot of other interesting people's beliefs. There's an awful lot of conglomerate rocks on the internet about beliefs. And there are some quite outrageous things, stupid things, crazy things written about health on the internet. There are some very good things written about health on the internet. But just because something is written on the internet, obviously doesn't make it true. Doesn't make it true any more than painting it on a wall makes it true, because that's how easy it is to put things on the internet now. So beware of what you read about health on the internet, unless it's an obvious health website related to a medical organisation or a healthcare organisation or something like that. Next. Mental health as we age, really important. Really important as we age to look after what's going on inside here, not just our bodies. We need to guard our closest relationships as we get older. We need to guard our relationships with our parents, if they're still alive. We need to very closely guard our relationship with our wife as we get older. And we need to guard and develop our relationships as we get older with our kids. Because the thing about relationships is they're like plants in gardens. If you don't feed them, and you don't water them, they die. Okay, my wife knows all about the garden. I know very little about the garden. I'm the owner builder. She's the owner gardener. in our house, that's the division of labour. But it is true that if you don't look after plants, they die. If you don't fertilise them, you don't water them, they die. And it's the same thing true of relationships. If we don't look after our relationships, particularly of those who are closest and dearest to us, those relationships die. They separate. They go off. Okay. Now, we have no women listening at the door, so I'll tell you a truth about Viagra. We all know about Viagra, don't we? We all know what it's for. It's for blokes to perform as they get older when the performance goes off, you know, a bit like aiming high. However, I have to tell you that the biggest reason that blokes' performance goes off as they get older is not because the blood supply to the penis doesn't work too well. It's because the emotions in the relationship that drive the whole process work even worse. So taking Viagra might indeed help in a physical sense, but if the reason that a person needs to take Viagra is because their relationship with their wife is so distant that there's no natural affection there, that they can't get it up, that is a much bigger problem than taking a pill. Do I make myself clear? That is really, really important. Physical health is important, but our mental health and our relationships are absolutely critical. I guard my wife with great jealousy because I suspect that there ain't another woman that'd have me. Okay. And I like to think my wife feels the same about me. After 30 years, we've really got, well, it's not quite 30, but it's getting there. We've really gotten close to each other. We know each other. But that closeness needs to be guarded and not taken for granted, because if it's taken for granted, it drifts. It drifts. And with our children, That closeness needs to be guarded as they get older, whatever age your kids are, as our children go through the teens. We need to guard that closeness by giving them some space, but being there to listen. Because my experience is that they don't listen to me too much between about the age of, 15 and 18. But then they start to come back and want to have very long and deep and meaningful conversations around about 19 or 20. And it's usually before they ask you for money. But there's a natural cycle in these things. And if you've guarded your relationships with the children as they've gone through the teens, then they come back in a real big way in the 20s and the 30s. Well, I haven't got one that's at 30 yet because I haven't been married 30 years. But they come back in a real big way in the 20s. And my friends tell me even more in the 30s and the 40s, and great joy with grandchildren later on. Stay in touch for your mental health with your family and friends as you get older, and keep your mind active. Okay, we have the saying in geriatric care, use it or lose it. And it applies to the muscles in your legs. It applies to the activity in your mind. It applies to all sorts of things. Use it or lose it. Keep your mind active. Keep reading. Keep thinking. Keep discussing. Keep being with your friends. Keep turning over ideas in your head. Do things that are going to keep you mentally active, because as you turn in and you're not interested in what happens, you not only become a boring person, you become a forgetful person, and you do start to lose your marbles. And I think the single biggest thing with mental health is save anxiety and save stress for things that really matter. Things that really, really matter. I don't think that my son's HSC subject choices really, really matter. I actually don't think that him studying 5 hours a night or him doing 2 hours a night when I think he should do 5 hours a night really, really matters. Because the HSC is not the end of the world. We're all alive, aren't we? Okay? HSC is not the end of the world. But a lot of people make it such an article of faith as their kids go through it, they drive their kids away from them emotionally just in those 2 years. Save anxiety and stress for the things that really, really matter. Because any of you guys that have had a major health scare and have had a major health problem will know that that matters in a much bigger way than a lot of the other things that are around us that we spend a lot of time and emotional energy invested on. Next, please. Spiritual ageing. Now, I work with older people, and so I talk about ageing a lot, but I need to let you know, all of you, that you have started ageing already. I think with the possible exception of a few people at the back that aren't yet 23. From about 23 onwards, everything's downhill, okay? We're ageing from that age onwards. Physically, we're certainly ageing mentally, and I take it from our mid-20s onwards, and particularly it picks up as we get into our 30s and 40s, we age spiritually as well. Because I look at the spiritual life and the fervour of the teenagers that are my kids' friends, and I think, where do they get it from? You know, how can they cope with singing those songs so loudly? And so many times, because I've got an ear problem that it all buzzes around inside my head once it's over 120 decibels. And, you know, how can they have these wonderful, deep and meaningful conversations for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours about all sorts of things? And I've gone straight to the issue and thought it out and talked it out and, you know, I'm on to the next thing within 30 seconds. We do get a bit older spiritually, but we also carry baggage spiritually. And I think one of the areas where we carry baggage is with our disappointments. As Christians, we don't always give our disappointments back to God and say, thank you for that disappointment, now help me move on. We hang on to our disappointments, we carry our disappointments, we grieve in our disappointments, we don't deal with our disappointments. We can become lonely as we get older in those disappointments. Nobody else understands, okay? Nobody else wants to hear about it. Nobody else has got the problems I've got. And it's awfully easy to carry disappointments and to carry loneliness into bitterness. And bitterness is the single biggest problem of older people in our society. Okay? Obesity is the physical problem, and it's an easy one to fix up compared to bitterness. And I can see people nodding. And I can see some people thinking, huh, what is this about bitterness? Bitterness is when you get to later in your life and you realise you're not going to be able to do all the things you thought you could do. Duh. You're not going to live forever. Duh. You're not going to be perfect. Duh. You're not going to be a millionaire. Duh. And I can say it. And it's perfectly obvious when you look at it from the outside, yet there are very many people to whom it is not obvious that they're not going to be a perfect person, that they're going to live forever, they're going to be a millionaire. And they're going to be very disappointed about those things. And because if we can't let go of those disappointments, they grow upon us and they make it harder and harder. And we don't see in the end what is it that matters most in the end. Next, please. Okay. There are two certainties in life, death and taxes. And I take it everybody in this room has experienced one of those. Even a kid going and buying an ice block has experienced the GST. You've experienced taxes. The other certainty is very certain. Next, please. How do you go about preparing for the last bit of life and preparing for the end? Because I have to tell you that saving up for a funeral and giving the money to somebody else to pay for it is the easy bit. It is easy to save up $8,000 to $10,000 because that's what a funeral is going to cost by the time most of you guys die with inflation and all the other things that are happening. That is the easy bit. The hard bits are the beliefs about where will you be the next day after you've died. Now, humanly speaking, it's obvious you're going to be in the Glebe morgue. Or you're going to be at the funeral parlour. Either way, you're going to be in a box, okay? But that's only your body. Where's the real you going to be? And that's where belief systems hit the road. And that's what partly this weekend's all about. Where will you be the next day? Can you be sure that you're going to be with Jesus alive the next day after your body is dead? The answer is you can be sure. Romans 10:9. One of the nicest verses in the Bible. If a man confess with his lips that Jesus is Lord and believe in his heart that God raised him from the dead, he will be saved. It's not politically correct to point out that the pronouns and the words in that verse are all male. So for a men's conference, I'll be politically incorrect and say that is a word for you blokes. You can be sure that you'll be with Jesus the day after you die. And if you can be sure, what about all the people around us who are desperately unsure of where they're going to be the day after they die? That is also what this conference is about. Thank you.